Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. See, this week I was planning to do an episode on this book made in Soviet Union in 1983 called «Это должен знать каждый», or «This should be known by everyone». The problem is, I was about to make fun of the book. You know, it's a kind of civil defense book. But it's actually not funny, because the book is really good and useful and actually has valid scientific information on how to survive nuclear blasts and chemical assaults and whatever. So, yeah, it just wouldn't make for a funny episode. I'd make like a duck and cover thing from the 50s, except better, because this one's actually good. And I know that it's good, because I have my friend here. His name is Aritz Paeglis, and he's the leader of the Latvian Transhumanist Association. He's also going to have a chapter in a real scientific book, and he's also have a few scientific publications. I mean, he is the exact sciences kind of guy. He's just around here to tell you some of the stories of the scientific community of what happened here in Latvia from at least 2000 or so. I don't even know, but he's managed to get himself into some quite a few interesting hard science adventures. And also, yeah, we're continuing our fundraiser because, you know, we're about halfway there from our 450 euro goal. So if you want to see me in Harvard, please go and hit that donate button on our homepage, theeasternborder.lv, because I'm going to Harvard and reading a lecture there. But, you know, without further ado, I'll be asking some questions to our friend here, Aritz Paeglis, and if you want people's stories, then, you know, have them, because, you know, I've heard quite a few of these things, but what Aritz has to say, and turns out, life of a scientist in the post-Soviet sphere is pretty fun, comrade. Hi, Aritz.
Hi, Kristaps. So, as you probably heard, my name is Aritz Paeglis, that's A-R-E-T-S. I'm the leader, as I was so...
Glorious leader!
The glorious leader of the Latvian Transhumanist Association, a computational neuroscientist by night and a software developer by day.
You have a chapter in the scientific book. What book is it?
Yeah, the book is a little bit outside my primary field. It's an adventure of a sorts. Basically, the book is called Liquid Biopsy, which is the fancy term for medical analysis of the various bodily fluids we have. And the chapter is on using deep learning and machine learning techniques in general to extract useful data from the liquid biopsy results so that we can use things like neural networks and classifiers and stuff like that to predict, say, cancer or Alzheimer's or various other severe conditions. The book will be out late September, probably interesting mostly to the domain experts, which excludes me.
In your student years, I know you had a lot of experiences in the Astronomical Society of Latvia, so could you please share some?
That's actually kind of a complicated thing. I did work for a while in the Latvian Society of Astronomy, but before that I worked in what's called the Foundation for Development of Astronomy, which is sadly defunct today, but basically it was a small volunteer group of professional and amateur astronomers dedicated to, well, spreading the good word about the science of astronomy. We organized events and actually built a couple of observatories in Valmiera and in Ventspils. Fun was had. And yeah, I have some stories back from the day. Do you want me to start about the Estonian astronomers and the telescope?
Yeah, then let's get to the one where you almost choke a guy.
Oh, we will. We will.
Sorry, comrades, this is still Eastern Border, so, you know, there might be violence and, you know, rude language in the stories. Go on.
Yeah, some rude language may follow, because these stories are very hard to convey properly without actually bringing up the emotions from that time, and the emotions from that time are sometimes rude. Story goes like this. We built a educational observatory in Valmiera, in the Valmiera State Gymnasium, and it was a nice little piece of work, usable for both teaching astronomy and for amateur field work, and some months after we finished it, it was in early September, I believe, we had a delegation, not we in particular, but the State Gymnasium had a delegation from the Tartu University in Estonia. Teachers and professors from there basically came here to see Valmiera, see the Baltic University, I think it's called officially. On their way, they dropped by in the State Gymnasium and the observatory. So, I'm sitting in the observatory tower. It's hot. It's a hot September day. The tower is poorly ventilated. I'm sitting there because I am told that, you know, important people from important places will drop by and you will have to do your best to introduce this thing to them. And sure enough, they drop by, three gentlemen and a lady, all professors from Tartu University, mostly from the departments of physics and astronomy. I show them around, show our sun-watching equipment, the projector screen, the follower, the astronomical tools, and of course the telescope, because that's the centerpiece, right? We had a decent telescope, like 18 centimeter, 20 centimeter, decent-sized telescope, Newton-Cassegrain system, if anyone's interested, reflector, so it uses a big mirror to focus the light from the distant objects and then project it into the eyepiece. They take a look, they take pictures, and they politely ask if they could use the telescope to look around, to check it out. Mind you, it's bright daylight, it's the middle of the day, and I'm slightly confused. What exactly do you want to see?
The communism, of course.
Well, the sun is kind of behind the clouds, and it's already going down, so it's not perfect for sunspots or whatever. But they are polite, and they said, no, we just want to, you know, see at least the distant horizon. Just take a look into your telescope, and, well, why not? I set up the telescope, I open up the roof of the tower, which is opened by a system of ropes and pulleys, because we didn't have a proper motor back then. Lift up the telescope, and I'm going to set it up. When they interject, no, we're professional astronomers and physicists. I'm pretty sure, little boy, that we will know how to handle a telescope. Okay. Sure. I sit back, and let them handle the telescope. Well, they aim it at the horizon, apparently, take a look into the eyepiece, and grow silent for some reason. And they exchange some words in Estonian, and they fiddle around with the controls, with the screws of the telescope, and take a look again. And, well, long story short, they leave, very disappointed, because the telescope apparently was not working after some 10 minutes of fiddling around with it. So, basically, they leave, and I go looking what the hell was happening to that telescope, because a telescope is not that complicated a thing to see something out of. And what to my wondering eyes should appear but the fact that they didn't lift off the lid, the lid against dust and dirt and stuff, from the business end of the telescope. So, they were looking into pure blackness, sure enough. I'm not the one to perpetuate stereotypes, but you know, all these jokes about slow Estonians, well, there you go. The disclaimer is I'm normally a relatively peaceful person. I have foul mouth, but I don't really...
Except the killer robots.
Don't talk about the killer robots before the year 2030. So, yeah, but I rarely raise my hand against anyone for any reason, but that particular time, that really brought out the worst of me. Where do we begin? We were organizing, the same Foundation for Development of Astronomy, we were organizing these yearly open-air astronomy events or parties, partially in competition with the similar parties organized by the Latvian Society of Astronomy. We were good-natured rivals in a way. They were much better funded, we were not bound by the rules of the university so much. So, this is a annual event, late August, I think, near Valmiera this time. Valmiera is a nice town slash city, some 100 kilometers from Riga.
It's a city by Latvian standards.
It's a city by Latvian standards, it's a town by everyone else's. A bit further off, there are large flat meadows and fields suitable for organizing large open-air events. So, this year, we wanted to show off. We wanted to really give the guests, the event-goers, something special. So, basically, with the help of European Union... Those were the early years of such thing being possible, with the help from the funds of European Union Science Development Program. We had bought a professional-grade telescope, costing some 25,000 lats, I think. Not all paid by ourselves, of course, but a really valuable, delicate, and awesome piece of hardware that allows you to see Mars the size of a teacup up there and see actual galaxies, the spiral arms of the Andromeda Galaxy, and see every tiny detail of the moon. All in all, a really nice piece of semi-professional astronomy hardware, and that, along with a bunch of other hardware we have brought along, it's in a tent in the field, and we have commanded a first or second course student from, and this is somehow important, from the Latvian University Department of Physics sub-department of optometry. So basically a guy who really should know a thing or two about optics and about the properties thereof. So, this guy is basically standing guard at the tent, because the locals are already pouring in. See our car. We had a car with portable observatory on top, a large, big-ass truck with the observatory tower on top, and of course the tent full of interesting things. And we ourselves are still waking up from last night's preparations. We're drinking our coffees and we're shivering in the damp, cold morning. And here's this guy galloping across the field towards us and yelling, "Guys, guys, I know you didn't ask, but I cleaned your telescope." And at that very moment, a cold shiver runs through our bones, because the thing is, you don't really clean professional hardware unless explicitly necessary. Those few specks of dust that can gather on the mirror, they will be perfectly invisible because the focus of the mirror is so far away. It's a telescope. It's for watching astronomical objects. One of us, I don't remember which one, we were four people there. One of us, already nervous, asks him, "What do you mean, clean the telescope? Like, with the compressed air balloon, sure, not with the water and alcohol mixture for the photography equipment, right?" He replies, "Like, no! I saw there was some dust on the mirror, so I basically took the arm of my sweater and just rubbed it off." You gods and little fishes, I... We knew that the telescope was dead at that very moment, because, see, the professional-grade optics usually has several layers of optical coating on top of the lens or the mirror, and on really big-ass expensive optics, some of these layers that are meant for precisely guiding the light and regulating the refractory properties, they are semi-solid. They are like thick gelatin. Under no circumstances whatsoever should you touch them with so much as a brush. And yeah, we ran off to the telescope, and sure enough, in several spots, the mirror was see-through now. And that was basically a moment where I legitimately, sincerely wanted to choke the living shit out of the guy. Because, not only was it a sudden and irreversible loss of monetary value, it was our best instrument, which we were planning for and gathering funds for the best part of 2 years, gone because of sheer idiocy of a completely unrelated third party. And of course he was trying to shrug it off, like, "I didn't know, nobody told me the optics are so sensitive." And here's a great quote from another guy called Ivis, my ex-colleague from the same foundation. "Right, you didn't know. And for how long did you shit on the lid of the toilet before anyone told you that must be taken off?" So, yeah, the event, of course, happened. We used our older, smaller telescopes and stuff, and we threw the guy out, obviously, but well, the telescope was gone. We sent it back to the service, and they politely replied that, "Guys, it will be less expensive to buy a new one than for us to repair it." So, yeah.
As you guys by now should know from my Space Race episode, it was like episode 12. Oh boy, I've been doing this for such a long time. I don't even know where episode 12 is. I've been getting copyright claims on that one for a while now, but because some beeps apparently resemble some electronic music of the modern era. But the Russians have been using the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. And the Soviets had their own space program. you might have noticed that one. But when you had Space Shuttle, we had something called Buran, or the Storm. Something of the storm. I think it's a storm.
It's a snowstorm.
It's a snowstorm. It's a hailstorm.
Yeah, it's a hailstorm, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the name of the spaceship. And recently, kind of relatively recently, some tourists went there and found out that in the outskirts of the Baikonur Cosmodrome, because it's a huge place, there were like two of them half built in an hangar there. And it was just amazing for them to photo that thing. But, you know, Americans just went in there with photographs. The problem is, we have a friend Boris, who's apparently going to arrive here later this evening. Because he didn't want to be on the show personally. But I wanted to include him because I've seen the pictures of this thing, which he has blatantly stolen. Let's be honest here. But as he found out that there were actually half-built Burans, he went there and he stole their motherboards under guns. And he's more of an Aretz friend than mine. I'm going to meet him tonight after this episode is recorded. I can't show you the pictures, sadly, without his permission. If he will allow me to, as I will meet him, then I shall post pictures. But for now on, you should know that this is Boris, and the stories from Boris are interesting because he's the guy who has, apparently, according to legends about him, a folder on his desktop which is called Porn, where only old motherboard pictures are being held.
Well, not just motherboards, old electronics of all kinds.
Yeah, but
mostly
but
military.
Please give us the story about Boris and the Baikonur Cosmodrome and stuff.
Well,
I have seen the pictures.
To be honest, I don't really know all the details because this is the one project, let's call it that, that he is still kind of secretive about. But essentially,
because he'll get arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But essentially, the story goes like so. After those two Americans went and photographed the half-built Buran prototypes whatever those were, because those things were in late
stage. You can Google this up. Just Google up Buran pictures or something, and you'll get the photos from those guys.
Yeah,
honestly.
And they were in the late stages of construction, like all the hulls and the plating is already in place, and some of the electronics, which is the hero of the story. Basically, yeah, the Baikonur Cosmodrome is enormous. It's not just the launch tables, the launch pads, and supporting infrastructure. It's steppe. It's enormous grassland. Every now and then there's a hangar, there's a tower, there's the remains of some sort of building. And in one of these, in a huge boxy hangar that no one apparently knew what's actually in there, not even the guards. They were like, eh, there's some old pre-Soviet fall electronics or hardware or something. They found these two marvelous pieces of Soviet engineering because they actually were really awesome. Their launch vehicle, the Energia, was in all parameters quite a bit better than the equivalent space shuttle launch vehicle and so forth. Well, sadly, didn't any manned flights, but there you go. So, after these news started to circulate that two of these things have been found, people were starting to go there, mostly to take pictures, but not us, no, not us post-Soviet people. We went there, well, not me personally,
yeah,
I haven't...
We went there to steal shit.
We went there with socket wrenches, and the gain from all that is a small pile of exquisite looking, like these this military hardware has a special quality to it. Everything is in gold, everything is ceramic, everything is lacquered. There are no botching, no extraneous wires, no nothing. Basically a small pile of circuit boards. I'm not even sure what those are. Some of them look like some communications equipment, some of them might be power supply boards, who knows. Well, Boris probably does. He's a god among the hardware nerds here, because he and some other guys that will, sadly, have to remain unnamed, they have been taking pictures of all sorts of military hardware and posting them in a public forum, actually. We will add the link to it later. There are photos of, like, missile guidance systems and old radars and radio equipment of all sorts and kinds. And some of it actually can be seen in real life in the Avionics Museum of Latvia, which is right next to the airport. There are all sorts of things. There are old military and service helicopters and planes and rockets. Well, sadly, without the payload, but, you know, not to go thinking that he's the only one capable of absolute crazy bullshit. From the same people I worked in Astronomy Foundation, Ivis, I mentioned him, he was the guy with the toilet lid phrase. Well, this one is not so much about the tech as about the daily lives, so to speak, of the people actually doing these things, of the scientists-to-be or engineers-to-be, the students of the Latvian University Department of Physics and Mathematics.
Wait, is math related to science?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
We had to put a Katy Perry quote here. We had to do it. I'm sorry.
I see you're a man of culture as well.
No, but seriously, I mean, If I get to ask questions to Neil deGrasse Tyson, is math related to science would not be one of those that I would ask.
Indeed. So, the story goes that in the mid to late 90s, in the campus of the Physics and Mathematics Department, there was the second floor in the campus house that was specifically designated for housing all the degenerates, alcoholics, and miscreants that for some reason couldn't be simply thrown out, but not...
Which is where me and Aritz would find their lovable little place and warm spot of love.
Most likely.
Because if you comrades think we're doing this sober,
basically the mystical second floor where lived mostly the kind of people where you would like to see leave and don't come back, but for some reason you really can't at the moment. Either they are steadily paying their university fee, or they still somehow manage to get really good grades or whatever.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, They are shipped off to the second floor. I'm not sure why the second, because it had the building has three floors, and the third floor inhabitants have to go through there every time. But yeah, so it was. So these fine people, Ives and company, are obviously drinking. Early-ish evening. One bucket of vodka at a time. Well, basically, actually, yes, they brought, as it was told me, they brought a box of vodka. Not a box of beer, a box of vodka. And apparently they were completely determined to finish it off. And at one point, well, you know...
Who wouldn't?
Well, sure. And at one point... And remember, it's the mid-90s. Internet is kind of here, but not so much, and certainly not in the campus house. Everyone has grown bored. All the stupid jokes have been told and retold, and no one has really any idea what to do with the drinking. So, of course, as one does, one of the drunks... comes up with a brilliant idea. He takes a liter can of peas, I think, of some preserve of some sort. Basically, a tin can, the volume of 1 liter, fills with acetone, got from God knows where, fills it with acetone, puts it in the middle of the floor and lights it on fire. So, basically, everyone sits around the communal fire. They're looking at the meter-tall, bluish-green flame and having a better time, at least, until one of them, near the window, yells in full volume, "Jesus Christ, the dean is coming, and with him, like, 2 members of the university council." Which they are, they're walking down the path among the buildings, and apparently one of them notices the flame in the window, and the dean runs upstairs and basically starts losing his shit. "What are you absolute idiots, brainless pieces of shit doing? Are you trying to burn the place down? Do you even know who I am? I am the dean. I can kick every single one of you out. I can withdraw the stipends. I can do whatever I want with you."
And that's on the floor with alcoholics and yeah. All the other general miscreants who, you know... I presume the second floor ended up with the best scientist Laffy has ever seen.
Well, you're not wrong. Most people graduate...
It's not a requirement to be an alcoholic.
It's not a requirement, but it somehow happens along the way. Basically, he has completely lost his shit. Ives, who is already shit-faced, obviously, thinks, well, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. And he lifts his...
flesh.
he lifts his head... glassy-eyed, even more so, and looks at the dean and asks in the blurry, slurred voice of a long-time alcoholic, "Not even candles are allowed?" Upon which the dean was apparently pointing his finger at the giant tin of acetone burning merrily in the middle of the room, and apparently the dean was so astounded and speechless that the only thing he could reply was, "No, not even candles are allowed," and he left. Apparently every one of them got away with just writing a written explanation of their misdeeds without any punishment, without anything.
Yeah, but you know, I have to continue a bit here because you know my day job right now is in fixing things. I fix iPhones, MacBooks, and drones from DJI.
There was a drone that apparently a lifeguard had thrown into the sea. Literally thrown into the sea. He had flown it face down into the sea trying to film something. And then it wasn't enough, because once we got it at the service, and I'll make a huge episode just about, you know, the adventures of Eastern European phone slash drone service. But yeah, the idea was that he managed to drop it into the sea, then he held it on his car roof for 8 hours, while paranoically, systematically googling up what the hell should you do with a drone. Then he found out that, hey, drying it out is a bad idea if it's salt water. So he poured from a hose, normal, like, drinkable water on it. Then he decided that, hey, this is a lot of moisture still in it. So what about, you know, I'm still on the seaside. I shall now purchase some cleaning liquid for boats, for the motors of boats. And just douse my drone, which costs about like 1,500 euros, in this liquid. Then after that, he decided that, you know, yeah, I've done with the liquid, I've done with the salt. Now I'm gonna bring it to the service, which he did. He was quite honestly surprised when we told him, laughing, that yeah, his drone is beyond repair, and that, you know, he had actively participated into his drone being irreparable now. But I want to ask you, by the way, Aretz, is that we have all these funny stories about, like, students and everything, but what's the funniest thing that has happened to you with your transhumanist society? What even is the transhumanist society?
Oh, let's
get to some more, like, serious points here. We have last, like, 15 minutes of the conversation, so please go on.
That's a good question. Well, transhumanism is basically the idea that just like we improve our living conditions in the world, we invent new cultivars and we terraform already livable Earth to something more fitting for us. The same way we can use the discoveries of science and technology to improve ourselves, our bodies, our brains, so that we can, for example, live longer and avoid all sorts of genetic disorders and
like death.
And ultimately, perhaps even death, one way or another. That is a really long and complicated topic on its own. But yeah, for example, maybe it's possible. Who knows? But maybe it's possible, for example, to digitize your brain. Basically, to scan it. The details are massive, but anyway, and to put it in a computer so that you, or at least something that is very similar to you, may live on without the limitations of biological decay and degradation that so far inevitably follows in the life of every one of us.
So the thing is, you know, I'm making this Eastern European podcast here, but a lot of people have asked me about whether or not, you know, do you have any real science going on there, whatever. The thing is, Aretz proves that we're not a backwards place. We actually have
Different
things.
Oh, no, so there's a lot of good science going on in Latvia. It is severely underfunded, and it doesn't really have the recognition it perhaps could use. But the work is there, and there are many very competent and brilliant people doing good work in all in the across the entire spectrum of STEM disciplines. So yeah, basically transhumanism.
Oh my god, I'm not from the STEM.
So yeah, basically transhumanism is this: we can use science and technology to improve ourselves just the same way we improve our environment and the various entities in it, and
Wait. So does that mean that you're trying to make Deus Ex real from the video game?
Well, yes and no. Yes, in the way that it is definitely already happening. There are cybernetic limbs with sensation built in with touch and temperature and pressure. There are replacement legs and eyes and all sorts of things steadily getting better by the day. There are people, including our little team, but there are far more competent and well-funded than us, that are actually actively working on the great task of digitizing brains and perhaps one day running them in computers. So that part is completely true. These things are happening. On the other hand, I really can't predict what turns society and politics will take regarding all this. It might turn out something like Deus Ex. It might turn out something better or worse or completely different. The fun stuff that we're doing is we're trying to inform people of all this so that they may better serve our robot overlord. So that basically when these changes arrive in full force, that people are not completely scared, completely out of the water. Because what do you do when suddenly in society you can design your baby? You can select which genes they will have and have not. Like, what if you... I mean, it starts simple enough. You take out something that probably no one wants anyway, like predisposition to cancer or Daltonism or any number of genetic disorders. But then you get inevitably to the point where, for example, you can not only fix what's broken, but improve what's already relatively healthy. What do you do in a time where you can't select your future children for intelligence or good looks or strength, agility, whatever? All these things are either already in some research stages or are at least theoretically possible. So, at one point, we, as species and a civilization, will have to face these things and decide what to do with them. So one of the things we do is try to inform people that all of these things have their upsides and downsides, but nothing is so black and white. Nothing is completely harmless or completely evil, just like in everything else, just like in every other application of technology.
Well, how will we and Americans live in the future where everything's digitized?
Well,
and that's a fucking complex question that is I'm prepared for.
That is an incredibly complex question, and of course one that I am not in any capacity qualified to answer with any certainty. Well, cultures will live on in their way, in their own way. They will change. They will adapt. As they have since whenever.
Beer was invented, and that's not a joke.
Since beer was invented, that's really not a joke. Beer really kickstarted a lot of things. How will any of these cultures look in 50 or 100 years after these immense technological changes have started to happen? I don't know, but, to quote a fake Chinese proverb, may we all live in interesting times. So, but basically, the really funny story of our time here as the Latvian Transhumanist Association is probably this, and this is one I haven't told anyone, including my mate Kristaps here. So basically, there is this thing called the Future Day, which is a small impromptu celebration. It's not a holiday, but it's basically a day where, unlike every other holiday or celebratory day out there, Basically, instead of celebrating the past and the achievements of our ancestors and...
Which is what I do, fine.
we opted for one day among all these where we celebrate what is yet to come. Which is, of course, as vague as it gets, because who knows. But, basically, this is a day where people come together... discuss what they have done to change the future, what they think the future will bring, and try to focus on the good and the constructive aspects of it. So, this is celebrated in March the 1st every year. It's not an official day, but transhumanists and futurists and... So, back to something completely different... And yet, not so much, because this, the next story...
Just shitting in a bucket is what we do here.
Well, actually, the next story is going to be about...
shitting in a bucket?
No, but it is going to
Close
be...
Close enough!
It is going to be about difference of opinion and understanding each other, or not. So, the future days ago... in 2016, which was actually our second Future Day celebration.
The Day of the Future.
The Day of the Future. We were gathered together in one of the tea houses of Riga, a nice little establishment called Apsara. Yeah, it's really nice, and basically we are such a constant customers that basically everyone is giving us discounts and greeting us like honored guests there. We had gathered there most of the association, which is like 20 people, a number of guests from our Facebook page. Which you can, by the way, follow if you want.
Yeah, please do.
By looking up Latvian Transhumanist Association in Facebook, you will be taken there.
If you want to follow a very obscure Latvian organization, this is
what you should... Yeah, exactly. So, basically, we are something like 30 people, which is near the capacity of the tea house, at least the lower floor. We are sitting around tables moved together and sipping tea or beer or whatever, talking about this and that and the glorious future, the things that machines will bring us and the things...
2030 and the killer robots.
Oh, yeah. The things that machines will bring us and the things they probably won't. Yeah, so basically, there's a guy, a relatively decent-looking elder guy, maybe like 50 years old, with his lady companion, wife, something, and they're listening kind of intently all the time, and we have in our conversation arrived at what I was talking about before, about brain uploading, basically, and he goes like, but you can't preserve a mind by uploading the brain, and I'm like, okay, well, why is that? Well, everyone knows that the mind is not located in the brain. Most of us kind of grow silent for a bit, and one of us, I think Boris, is like, maybe you could explain your big idea. But, well, where is it then? Well, everyone knows that the mind is a separate entity from the body, and you can't really put it in a computer. This is futile, and you will only bring about monsters, at which point we kind of understand what kind of guy this is, and we do our best to ignore him, because the last thing we want is an hour-long futile rant. It's not really worth it, so we are going on with our conversation. We're not throwing him out, because why would we? And at one point, he rises up, takes one of these, you know, the small candle holders with the tea candles, still burning, by the way, and yells at his full voice, "Blasphemers, you're assholes and abominations! And he throws this candle holder at Boris. He gets his face full of paraffin. He gets hot paraffin in his beard and hair. Well, then we did throw him out. Well, we called the guards of the tea house, and we did throw him out. But yeah, basically, we have a martyr in our midst that has suffered for the cause of transhumanism. Okay. I'm not even sure the guy was a Christian, because the name of God never even escaped his mouth.
Who knows what
kind of person he was, but he was an asshole.
Wait. Before you go, I want your final words on it.
My final words, if any, would probably be
You have an audience of about 70,000, and CIA listens to you here now, so
Hi, CIA.
And Russian Secret Services as well.
Hi, yeah, basically...
Please don't kill you, would be nice.
Please don't kill me. I will be very angry when I come back. But my final words would probably be, the future will be stranger than we can imagine, not just we do imagine, and we won't be prepared for it, but at the same time, please read, absorb information, communicate, and don't be assholes to each other.
До свидания, товарищи, and we're gonna do our best. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to The Eastern Border. If you have any comments or specific details you'd like to know, you're welcome to leave it in the comment section on our site, theeasternborder.lv, and we'll rummage even to the western border to find you an answer. Like this podcast? Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or on our RSS feed. Happiness is mandatory. Good reviews and donations feed the farmers of our kolkhoz in the great motherland. The Eastern Border salutes you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.